This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. After 20 years of planning and preparation, the City of La Crosse announced the next step for the Riverside North Development Project. This new neighborhood along the Mississippi River, just north of downtown, represents an opportunity to build new housing and commercial space for La Crosse, as space within the city becomes increasingly more difficult to come by. This month, the Redevelopment Authority selected a master developer for the project, with a record of projects that many in the Cooley region may be familiar with. Joining us now to talk about what's next for the Riverside North project are Jason Gilman, Director of Planning and Development for the City of La Crosse, Andrea Schnick, La Crosse's Economic Development Planner, and Blair Williams, President of Wired Properties in Milwaukee, the new master developer for the project. So Jason, could you start by talking a little bit about, you know, where is this property when we say Riverside North?
Well, geographically, the easiest way to describe it is right where the three rivers meet. So it's got an incredible history, you know, from a geographic standpoint and with regard to the city of La Crosse's history, but also the state of Wisconsin's history, because we've got the Black River, which was used for forestry and lots of sawmills during the turn of the century and into the 19th century. And way before European settlement, too, this was a prehistoric site and a site that Native Americans used. So it's got this really rich history. But the area of development is actually an area that has been occupied by industrial uses over the years, and due to a lot of very hard work by people that preceded me at the City of La Crosse, this site was cleaned up and prepared for redevelopment.
Yeah, Andrea, could you talk a little bit about what this site looks like right now?
So right now, there's about half of the site is wetland area. So there are some walking trails that already exist through that. So some people who ride their bike and walk around downtown may already be familiar with that part. But there's an additional 30 acres north of that that's just basically grassland right now. So we've been working on adding fill to that site to raise it out of the floodplain. So it's just a lot of dirt and overgrown weeds at this point.
And Blair, could you talk about, you know, what this project will eventually become? You know, what is the kind of the vision for the Riverside North?
It's a fairly remarkable circumstance to find a parcel of this size in a downtown environment for a city the size of La Crosse, or really a city of any size. And the natural resource component of this kind of takes it to a whole different level. Given the nature of the site in terms of its scale, it gives us the opportunity, I think, to shoot big. We can really create a new neighborhood here. It's not one development. It's not going to have one overriding single character or architectural form. This can really be a place where, you know, we talk about these words a lot in real estate development and in urban planning. I think they get overplayed a little bit, but live, work, play. This really is a site where those three things can be accomplished. But I certainly expect that we'll see housing here, and we'll see it across kind of a spectrum of form and affordability. I absolutely expect that we'll see play here. In fact, that's the one thing people already do on this site with the recreational trails, et cetera. But I think that with really mindful and intentional planning, we can create an environment that really cultivates that kind of interaction with nature and that piece of this. And then the work part is one that I think is almost as certain as the residential, in that we will create an environment where there very well will be certainly some retail and kind of professional office type environments. But I think there may also likely be some larger format office or medical office type uses as well. So we expect this to be a mixed use in kind of that biggest way possible, mixed use development. And I think we'll see it take on relatively organic forms, in that we'll see multiple developers execute their vision, kind of their specific vision for what we believe will meet the best outcomes for the plan.
Andrea, who is the city hoping will benefit from this area? I mean, who I guess will kind of use this space?
by saying the word everyone, I truly mean that. We want to have this be a place where people are living, but then also an area that other people outside of this neighborhood in the entire community that will be coming to there. So whether they're coming there to work during the day or whether there's a new restaurant or something that's really attracting them. As you mentioned earlier, this is really a remarkable site in that we don't have development opportunities like this in the city. So we want everyone to participate and to be able to utilize this site.
As we mentioned, this Riverside North area has a long history with the city, dating back to just kind of the geographic space, but also to when the city first started kind of envisioning what this property would look like. And so, Jason, I wonder if you could kind of, take us back to 1995 when the city first kind of started working on this Riverside North project.
Sure. My understanding is Mayor Zilke looked at acquiring a piece of land that would give the city some options with regard to the Oktoberfest, the festival. And there was a concrete plant, I think it was Western Wisconsin Ready Mix, that the planning department, Larry Kirch at the time and Mayor Zilke acquired, and I think the acquisition price was $25,000 or something like that. And one thing led to another over time, where the city then speculated on, well, what if we acquired the mobile oil site and helped clean up, do environmental remediation, and then what about the Petro site and so forth? And pretty soon a fairly substantial land assembly occurred that was, in this very historically significant and geographically significant site that is really at the gateway to our downtown, but also where the Mississippi and the Black and the La Crosse converge, and a master plan was desired, and then the city about 5 years ago took the public through a design charrette to start to look at how could we best respect this site from an environmental standpoint, but also create history in terms of, what does good sustainable urban development look like for the future of not just La Crosse, but the whole United States.
Why has this project taken so long to kind of take shape?
It's a whole combination of things. It's funding in some cases. It's negotiations with private landowners. It's environmental remediation and applying for grants. It's being very conscientious and engaging the public so that the public can help steer the vision and take ownership in the project. And it's creating a guiding document that then we can use to request expressions of interest from potential master developers like Wired. And our redevelopment authority was very deliberate about going through a fairly long process to make sure that we selected the right firm for the project, and we believe we did.
I imagine in projects like these, you only get one shot at completely building this space from the ground up, and I wonder if there's pressure there.
Not a night goes by that I don't feel the pressure, believe me. And part of that pressure is not only that we owe it to the citizens to do an exceptional job on this, but also to all the hard work that went into this, 28 years in the making. One of the things that Wired inspired us about is the whole idea of what does a really good public-private partnership look like, and how can we create an environment that is so desired by people, both internal and external populations, that it becomes an enormous success and an example of good urban development. So there is a lot of pressure, but it's sort of a good pressure.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the history and future of the Riverside North development. We're here with Jason Gilman and Andrea Schnick from La Crosse's Planning and Development Department, and Blair Williams from Wired Properties, the project's new master developer. Andrea, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what setbacks the city has experienced when kind of planning and starting this project. I know that there have been a few bumps in the road.
There have been. I think the environmental remediation of this site was something that was new to our city. There was a lot of land there that needed to be cleaned up, and a lot of different kinds of cleanup that needed to be done. It was a there was fuel contamination there, there was concrete contamination there. So just going through that whole process of cleaning up such a large site, and then also once it has been remediated, the need to raise it out of the floodplain. So any sort of construction that we want to do on that site, we need to make sure that there aren't any floodplain restrictions or constrictions with that site. And then also, the community is very excited about this project, and so I think a lot of times they don't necessarily see what's going on behind the scenes. They may not have, they've been waiting for our master developer to be announced. They've been waiting to see construction on the site. And there's, as Jason mentioned, the thought process that goes through this every single day. There hasn't been a day where we haven't been working diligently on this project. So even if Blair hasn't been announced to the public, we've been in constant communication with Blair and working on this project and building our vision and creating our vision. So we're really set to take off with this project now.
Yeah, Blair, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, what you feel like Wired Properties brings to this project.
That's a very fair and loaded question. We have concentrated in our business on working really hard in looking at how people drive the real estate decisions. And that's not to say that the buildings aren't fundamentally important and all of those things, but it's on our website, and so it seems trite when I say it sometimes, but we really believe that real estate isn't about structures that take up space. It's about spaces that structure lives. So we kind of start with the web of social dynamics that inhabit real estate and work backwards from that in order to create the type of environment that adds the most value. So I do think that we look at real estate through a slightly different lens than a fair number of other developers out there do. We've been fortunate to work on some larger format projects where I think this is another important distinction, where we are not ultimately responsible for designing and developing and owning all of the buildings. Rather, we are a key component in figuring out what the plan should look like, and then we'll execute our part and other folks can execute their parts. And I think that was one of the things and I can't speak for the city, but I think it was one of the things that made our proposal kind of fundamentally attractive to La Crosse. And in that, by that, I mean, we pay great attention to what that plan can be. How do we optimize the way the pieces go together? But then we just have great faith in the power of the local development market and even broader reaching than just local into the Twin Cities and obviously down to Milwaukee and beyond, for really bright developers to identify ways to exercise their core competency and do what they do best in furthering that plan. And so I think what we bring is, one, we definitely bring a measure of vision associated with what we like this outcome to be. And then also we bring just a natural collaborative approach where we look forward to working with other developers and other firms that are interested in adding and creating value at Riverside North.
People might be familiar with Wired Properties for the work that you guys have done in developing this, spaces around the new Milwaukee Bucks arena. I also know that in working with SEH, a company that's worked on Alaska's Great River Landing that some people in the La Crosse area might be familiar with. And so, I wonder if, Blair, if you could explain, kind of how Wired is working with these, SEH and Ringgachung architects on this project.
Yeah, so when we responded to the original request for expressions of interest, it was about 2 years ago. In fact, I think it was May 10th, 2015, when the first submittal went in. We had crafted a team with Matt Rinka and his firm, Ringgachung Architecture, and then SEH. They have a local office there in La Crosse, but they're a good-sized engineering and planning firm, and they actually have, I'm going to get this wrong, but it's 30 offices in 9 states, or I don't know exactly the number. I apologize to SEH if they're listening. But in any case, what we decided that we wanted to do was we wanted to put together a team of acknowledged experts in the field. We believed that no firm other than SEH had better experience and deeper understanding of not only this specific site, but even more specifically how to effectively plan for and program waterfront environments. So we thought SEH was absolutely leader in the class there. And then Rinka Chong, we'd worked very closely with on a number of projects here in Milwaukee. One very large-scale redevelopment that occurred here in Milwaukee called Drexel Town Square has a number of elements that speak to what Riverside North represents for La Crosse. It was the city of Oak Creek, which is a smaller outlying city outside of the city of Milwaukee, still in Milwaukee County. It was an 80-acre site, former manufacturing site, kind of breaking it into two 40-acre sites. And the one 40-acre site is where we were involved very heavily on the planning side and then also executed a substantial portion of the development. It has a new city hall and library and a public plaza and a hotel and a large medical office building and a bunch of apartments and senior housing and now mixed use with retail on the ground floor and apartments above. And it really had many of those similar types of kind of forward-thinking planning elements, including a large wetlands park and recreational trails. So Rinka had deep experience working on planning for projects like this. And then I was also working with Rinka when they were involved on the planning side for the Milwaukee Bucks efforts outside of the new arena. And I got hired as a consultant to the Milwaukee Bucks as managing director of real estate to help them solve for the acreage around the arena. And that arena project, when it started, was about 30 acres, and we're dealing with about 13 acres now to continue that process. So what we do is the way this process is established and the way the team is set up, Wired Properties is the managing member of the kind of master development entity. And then Rinka Chung and SEH each will have contracts with that master development entity. And as a team and working collaboratively with Jason and Andrea and the full department there at La Crosse and then also the RDA, we will arrive at a master plan that establishes what the future developments will look like, what their form will be, what the density will be, what the uses will be, and kind of all of those things. And then we'll work to identify those developers that can develop the individual pieces.
Jason, you mentioned earlier that you feel like the city made the right choice in selecting this, Wired Properties as the master developer. Why?
I think in part because of their experience on projects of this scale, but also more importantly, their strategy that we were looking for a developer not just to build roads and sell lots, but one that was very thoughtful about every lot that gets developed and how it, as Blair mentioned, shapes lives. So we have a lot of challenges in cities these days. If you haven't noticed, we've got an aging population, labor scarcity, decaying infrastructure, climate change, and some of the impacts of strong storms and stormwater pressure, and a variety of other things. And a site like this can actually create a model for people to look at and how we can do things better in an urban environment, and especially on a site that's getting reused. So Wired brings that sort of comprehensive thinking and sort of deep thinking about development to the table. They're not just interested in building buildings, but really creating something that's quite special.
Where does funding for the master developer come from?
It comes from the development itself. The Redevelopment Authority does have some capital that they prepared as part of the original process so that they would have funding for the initial contract, and then as land is sold and development occurs, some of the funding is actually coming from the development itself. This area is also within Tax Incremental Financing District number 12, and TIF districts continue to pay taxes to all the taxing entities, so the county and the school district and the city continue to receive a base tax revenue from this area. But as real estate appreciation occurs, that's what can get leveraged to build infrastructure, to create amenities, and look at management of the environmental area. It could also be used to stimulate higher and better things on the site, better architecture, or things that last longer for the city and provide greater value and return on investment.
That's Jason Gilman, Director of Planning and Development for the City of La Crosse, here with us today to talk about the latest progress on Riverside North, a housing and commercial area planned for north of downtown La Crosse. Also joining us is Blair Williams from Wired Properties and Andrea Schnick from La Crosse's Planning and Development Department. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Andrea, we've started talking about why this property is really important for the city. And, you know, we talked earlier briefly about how property like this is kind of hard to come by in La Crosse these days. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, kind of what development usually looks like in the city as far as development going on in the downtown area and you know, how this is a unique opportunity?
It's often said that the city of La Crosse has constraints on development or expansion, and we look at that a little bit differently. It's different than it is in other cities. We don't necessarily have a lot of extra land to grow from, but we do have a lot of redevelopment opportunities and a lot of vertical development opportunities. So we look at each parcel that's currently not being used to its highest and best use, and what can we do to change that? So we aren't necessarily presented often with something this size where we're able to develop each, you know, this is a much different than we're seeing in other parts of the city, but it's unique in that, you know, it's more of a blank canvas. So we have a lot more different options to work with on this. So we still plan to see a lot of vertical investment. So probably not a lot of one-story buildings, but more mixed-use family buildings where we're seeing commercial or retail on the first floor and then residential above, something like that we're able to utilize each site better.
In the downtown area of La Crosse, you know, we have seen a lot of redevelopment going on and new housing going in, new commercial space. I wonder if this project will be kind of a continuation of that in some ways.
That's what we would like to see. We have an extremely strong downtown. It's historic. It's beautiful. It's thriving. There's something going on all 7 days a week, almost all hours of the day. And that's exactly what we'd like to see. It's very dense. There's a lot of activity happening there. When the charrette process happened in 2014, the idea was that we want it to be an extension of downtown without taking away from our downtown, and that's something that we still want to stay true to. So we want to see this will be different, but it'll complement our downtown.
Blair, as the developer coming in, you know, how did looking at the downtown area of La Crosse, you know, kind of influence the way that you were kind of looking at this project?
Well, I think everything that Andrea just said about the strengths of La Crosse informed our approach to this. But I think what's interesting for me, always looking at communities in which we do work, is trying to identify, you know, what's going really well, what's not going well, and then just how do you grow, but grow that's in a way that's not at the expense of where success is already occurring. So, you know, we're trying to be very sensitive and considerate of the strength of the downtown commercial market in particular, and make sure that we don't create an environment that's just simply competitive to that. We want to be mindful of how we can be accretive to the broader economy in La Crosse, and what kind of focus, commercial focus, should we be making as we think about these plans. So what we're looking at as we go into this is, one, architecture matters. We believe that architecture matters. If La Crosse is demonstrative of anything, it's how you can have a compelling blend of beautiful old historic buildings and then interesting new contemporary buildings. There's a fair amount, I would characterize, in La Crosse of late 1950s to mid 1970s architecture too that we don't necessarily need to replicate, but there's opportunity, I think, for good architecture for sure in a location like this. There's also opportunity for just thoughtful design and remembering always that the pedestrian's on the ground and that this community needs to be created for the pedestrian, not for the automobile. I think that's one of the things that La Crosse really represents, particularly for folks coming from cities like Milwaukee, where you get into the old downtown in La Crosse and you realize that it's meant to be consumed on foot, not in a car. And I think that this needs to be an environment where if you get rewarded for being on foot or on a bike, and that you are finding yourself in an environment where it's been scaled appropriately to that experience. So I think we will let the successes of La Crosse inform us in how we plan the specific uses. And when we talk to potential developers for what their plans are, we want to make sure we ensure that their actual realizable plan is consistent with kind of those community objectives. And, you know, the one thing that hasn't come up is that during the charrette process, there was a really dedicated element of arriving at what can be characterized as the guiding principles for this. And we look to those guiding principles as the benchmarking against which we can ensure that our plan is meeting community expectations. So for us, I think everything about La Crosse holistically influenced the way that we looked at this, but it's as we create the plan itself, we'll be looking at more of the specific elements of La Crosse that we think we can both amplify the positive and counterbalance against some of the stuff that's not going quite the way everyone would like it to.
One thing that has come out of the recent, you know, development happening in the downtown area is, I think, new concerns about gentrification happening in that area with housing and, you know, the commercial costs going up for people who maybe have traditionally used that space. And Jason, I wonder if this is something that the city is looking at and how maybe that's informing this new Riverside North project.
Well, it certainly is. And one of the guiding principles that I'd like to point out in particular is promote community well-being. And one of the other things that WIRED inspired us and the Redevelopment Authority about is their approach to looking at community well-being holistically as part of the development. So when you think about community well-being, and this ties back to, you know, the labor scarcity and just housing in general, because right now I think La Crosse is at about a 2-3%, somewhere in their vacancy rate. So we have a very tight housing market. So when we look at a site like this and we think about how do we create housing that maybe is a democratic type of representation of the income levels in the surrounding area, and that we make decisions carefully in that regard. I don't think the city is in a position where we are going to mandate certain target markets. We want to be somewhat market responsive, but we also want to be in a place where if we can use a new product or a new design or a creative way to house people that drives their energy costs down, drives their transportation costs down, because, again, they can get on a bus or they can get to places on foot, and the unit itself is so well designed that even if they're losing some square footage in what might be considered traditional housing in this area, they're still very comfortable and they've got that economic security that comes with all of those efficiencies, which ties right back to well-being, because well-being is both mental and physical. So I think this has there's a tremendous opportunity here to create a strata of affordability and accessibility and attainability for people so that we hit that mark with regard to community well-being.
Jason Gilman, Director of Planning and Development for the City of La Crosse, is here with us today to talk about the history and the future of the Riverside North Project, a new housing and commercial area in the City of La Crosse. He's joined by Andrea Schnick from La Crosse's Planning and Development Department and Blair Williams from WIRED Properties, the project's new master developer. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on next steps for Riverside North. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. In 1995, the City of La Crosse started making plans for a new housing and commercial area along the Mississippi River. More than 20 years later, the city has finally named a master developer for the project and is moving forward with putting those plans into action. WIRED Properties from Milwaukee will work to lay the groundwork for the 65-acre property just north of downtown. Joining us now to talk about the future of the Riverside North Project are Jason Gilman, Director of Planning and Development for the City of La Crosse, Andrea Schnick, La Crosse's Economic Development Planner, and Blair Williams, President of WIRED Properties in Milwaukee. Andrea, I wonder if you could kind of give us a breakdown of, you know, what this property is composed of. You know, I believe it's 65 acres in total, but only part of that is developable.
Yeah, that's an easy word to get tripped up on a little bit. About half of that is wetlands, so there's water there that we don't anticipate filling in. We want to keep that as recreation, which is just naturally what it needs to be, and also we see it as a great amenity to downtown. Right now, there are some trails that go through there. I think that they'll be highly more utilized once there's more activity down there. So about half of it is developable. And what we anticipate having on that other half is a mixture of residential, primarily residential, but then also a commercial office component and possibly some retail as well. In 2014, there was a very intense, active charrette process. So a lot of community members, a week-long process. This was before Jason and I were in the planning department, but other staff members, Lewis Kuhlman and Tim Acklin in our planning department, were very instrumental in conducting that charrette process. And SEH was also a part of that process. So the community really let us know what they wanted to see there, and that is still the basis of what we're looking at. And that's something that Blair, throughout this entire process of interviewing a master developer, he understood that was still our intention. That was still important to the community to live up to that outcome of that charrette process. And so that was something that he agreed to, that he wanted to follow that as well. Although understanding that since 2014, there have been changes in the economy, just naturally. So fine-tuning that to where we are now and updating that master plan to be more relevant to what the city needs.
Yeah, Blair, earlier you mentioned that there were some guiding principles that came out of this public meeting process. And I wonder if you could go into more details about what those are.
There was a whole series of principles that the city had come up with through this process. So kind of phrasing that defines them in a lot of ways. So, for example, they're looking for developments that celebrate the spirit of place. So this to us means recognizing that you really need to have placemaking that starts with the effective creation of the built environment. So the spirit of place, address the edges, means that you want to make sure that you're kind of following certain urban design principles and that you kind of address the edges of properties in order to kind of handle the scale and create that kind of moment of pedestrian interaction that can be most effective. So a more suburban reaction would be to set the buildings farther back from the sidewalk, with a more urban one being to put it closer to the edges. So address the edges. They talk about embracing the confluence of the rivers. That one's pretty obvious. We've got three rivers. We've got them at the confluence of those rivers is kind of a remarkable kind of geographical place. And how you address that moment is very important. There's a bunch more that I think have greater kind of trickle down impacts, a continuum of community engagement, promote community well-being, promote environmental consciousness, embrace resiliency. I mean, all of these are principles that the city established for itself through the charrette process, which means that these are things that are important to the citizenry in the community. And they are the underpinnings of a philosophical approach that will drive the way we work towards creating a master plan that can then be realized by developers throughout La Crosse.
Andrea, returning for a moment to the fact that there are a lot of wetlands and in environmental, spaces, what is the city thinking about as far as working to kind of preserve those and have minimal impacts to the three rivers that kind of come together in that area, and also wildlife that may kind of exist in that area currently?
Sure. So that's something that we're very conscious of. So there are some wetlands, some pond areas that could likely be cleaned up and be utilized for recreation, but we don't anticipate any kind of, motorboats on there, anything that will continue the contamination. There's also a sensitive a Civil War ship that sunk just in this area, the War Eagle. So when we're looking at going onto the Black River to the west of this project, we want to be really sensitive if there's any sort of, for example, if there, a marina were to be built or something like that. Those are things that are always in the forefront of this project, that sustainability overall is very important, and environmental sustainability is a key part of this project.
I want to kind of dive into the details now. And Jason, have you talked a little bit about, you know, how much money the city has already invested in starting to kind of work towards this project? Do you kind of have a ballpark figure?
Well, I think the acquisitions over the years were in the millions of dollars. That combined with the environmental remediation, so just getting the site shovel ready was in the millions. But we one way to look at that is what is every public dollar leverage? So when we're talking about return on investment, you know, we planners always like to talk about triple bottom line return. So we're looking at not just the tax base that we're going to recreate on the site, which is probably going to be many fold, you know, what was there originally, but then how does this impact the city socially and environmentally, and how does it create a new model? So there's far-reaching return on investment relative to what the city has put into the project over time, and not to mention that, you know, the real estate itself, the almost 30 acres that the Redevelopment Authority has, is quite valuable land. It's in a very key location, adjacent to these great recreational resources, but also natural resources that are part of the master plan. And then it's on Copeland Avenue, of course, right at the gateway to the city's downtown. So the land value itself is something that is just going to appreciate. And that's one of the things that Blair and Wired Development has also talked to us about, and that is that as we develop land, we look at how do you add value each step of the way. So there's a synergy that occurs between sites and between uses that strives for higher and better things in the future.
Yeah, Blair, do we have an estimate of what we think the projected value of this development could be?
Well, I mean, I hesitate to throw numbers around, but certainly I've seen numbers as high as $200 million for the overall development value. It could be $100 million because the reason I'm a little bit hesitant is there's the assessed value, which is one important metric. But at the end of the day, that's one of the three bottom lines that we want to use to drive this process. As an example, if we figured out a way to put in a really remarkable community center and kind of a community engagement area that takes up land, but then ultimately doesn't drive much tax value, it may be that it has a far greater return than putting up an office building there that would have concentrated value on a per acre basis. So what I believe, and I'm very confident of, is that if we hit our mark on driving development to accommodate kind of that live, work, play environment and to hit a diversity of use and diversity of users, we will hit very strong economic return benchmarks. But I am also confident that if we start with kind of that underlying community return and also the environmental return, attention to those forms of return will drive economic return in their own way. And one of the things that TIF districts also do is they look not only at the value of just what happens on the site, but what is the impact of that economic activity and of that community activity on values in a broader district and in a broader neighborhood. So as we look at Riverside North, we can't look at it in isolation. We have to think about what are the implications for the other side of Copeland? What are the implications for the neighborhood to the north? What are the implications for the near north downtown neighborhood? And I think that when you start doing that, the economic opportunity that's presented here is relatively unparalleled.
That's Blair Williams, president of Wired Properties, the new master developer for the Riverside North project. Here with us today to talk about the latest progress on Riverside North, a housing and commercial area planned for north of downtown La Crosse. Also joining us is Jason Gilman from and Andrea Schnick from La Crosse's Planning and Development Department. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Andrea, as we've talked, you know, there has already been a significant taxpayer investment in kind of moving forward with this project. And so, you know, as the city works to come up with a plan, I wonder, you know, what the city is doing to make sure that they're protecting that taxpayer investment.
Sure. So when we look at every project, every development that requires, you know, whether it requires city investment or some sort of subsidy, that's something that we'll look at individually with each project that comes forward. So the current agreement for this project is between the Redevelopment Authority of La Crosse and Wired Properties. So it's not with the city of La Crosse because the Redevelopment Authority actually owns the land. But if there is any sort of request for assistance from the city, that's when the city will come forward, and we'll look at every single project individually. What is this really giving back to the city? And obviously, protecting the taxpayers' money is extremely important to us, and that's the main, you know, one of the main reasons that we're doing this project, is to increase that tax base, to add a new amenity to the community that everyone can be a part of. And just besides not just protecting the taxpayers' dollar, but really developing a new neighborhood that's the ideal situation for everyone in our community.
So, Jason, now that we have a new master developer in place, what is the next step?
Well, the developer starts to engage prospective investors, and then attracts that investment and helps the Redevelopment Authority negotiate those options on property. Alongside of that, or parallel with it, they also have their team of engineers and architects that will actually look at site design. So what is the best fit for each one of these investors, and then how, as I said earlier, how do they create synergy between uses and add value to each subsequent investment. The process that kind of conceptually right now is that we will use 2018 to do that work, to basically attract the investors, start to look at that dialogue between the investors, the master developer, and the Redevelopment Authority, and then start to create the first phase of the project. If things go well, we'll be working on infrastructure in 2019, and then potential development that is private investment in 2020. So that is the schedule. Each investment that occurs, each site that occurs, gets looked at by our Redevelopment Authority as it's presented by Wired Development. So there'll be, as Andrea said earlier, there'll be decision process relative to anything that if they're asking for any kind of assistance. We have a very structured and respected criteria when we talk about public assistance on projects that has been held in high regard by the city's one of our financial consultants, Ehlers and Associates, and we'll continue to follow that guidance as the project moves forward.
Yeah, Blair, what do you see as important factors that, you know, need to take place to make sure the city gets, or this project rather, gets off the ground?
Well, the one of the things that's interesting about the real estate development generally, but certainly a project of this scale, is how many things you have working on concurrent paths. So there's a lot of processes to manage. So one important process here is just getting the master plan in the condition and position that it needs to be to then run through the entitlement process so that the city can adopt that plan and put it in place. While you're doing that, you need to be working on all of the underlying engineering that will allow the infrastructure on this site to get built. So that's the roads, but, you know, it's not just roads. It's curb and gutter and sewer and water, and, you know, where does electricity come from, and natural gas and all of those things. And it's how do you get all of those pieces in the form of civil engineering and stormwater management and all of those things to work the way that they need to work. At the same time, we're going through
still the tail end of all that cleanup and the fill that have been occurring on site. And all of that work needs to be coordinated in the right way in order to anticipate what the requirements will be of each of the individual developments. We also need to do additional investigation to fully understand how these buildings need to be designed in order for them to work effectively. What are the foundational systems going to be? Are they going to be deep pile? Are they going to be spread footings? Or can we have basements or no basements? All of those things we need to get to a level of certainty on, because it will also drive the pace of play on development. So I think that the number one thing to ensure that this project continues to go the way that it's supposed to is to ensure clear lines of communication between all of the parties, and then also just to make sure that you've got the right teammates executing their core competencies to the best of their ability in order to make sure everyone's pulling on the same oar of getting us to a position where we could be installing infrastructure next year.
Andrea, you mentioned earlier that, you know, part of this project has been, you know, focused on getting this area out of the floodplain. And, you know, a lot of La Crosse's neighborhoods are kind of in that, you know, force, you know, needing to purchase flood insurance just because of their location. And so I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, why this is important, that this is not, an area that's in the floodplain.
Flood insurance is something that I know a lot of households in our community struggle with, and our office has been working very closely with our state representatives to see what we can do to mitigate some of that expense. I know we have Jason works diligently on this, and so it's an unnecessary expense, especially since we look at our community and we look at the last time that we had a flood. So a lot of these homeowners, it's a big struggle for them when they're possibly paying as much in flood insurance for a flood that very likely will never occur as much as they are on the mortgage of their home. And I know that that's a financial struggle. So we really want to get this area out of the floodplain. So as Jason was also mentioning before, when you have also looking at the cost of heating your home, or you're paying off your student loans, anything that we can do to mitigate those extra expenses so they can focus on living a really equitable life, that they're able to enjoy themselves and not have to worry about those extra expenses. We want to be able to do what we can do to help that.
In doing, you know, research for this topic, I heard that this project could benefit from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, because it's an economic opportunity zone. And Jason, I wonder if you could kind of explain what that means.
Sure. Well, I kind of feel like this is Andrea's area, but it is a very important tool that we're looking at. And I think this area is also part of the New Market Tax Credit Census. Okay. So those tools are basically gap financing that allows developers to tap into other tools. So when you look at a conventional list of capital that a developer might use, you might see equity investment, you might see bank financing, and you might see mezzanine financing where they have another investor involved, or sometimes you've got public investment going in, which traditionally takes the form of tax incremental financing or community development block grants. But sometimes there's a gap too when you have a project that has to have special footing and foundation, or they want to go up and hit a higher mark with regard to the architecture, or maybe they're going to make a bigger upfront investment to drive down energy costs. That's where some of these external tools can be really useful. And the Opportunity Zones program is much like some of the other tax credit programs, like New Market Tax Credits. But in this case, what I understand is it allows developers who actually have capital gains liabilities to invest money in areas that are considered to be in need of investment. So this is another tool in our toolbox that will help developers access capital to fill those gaps.
Yeah, Andrea, I wonder if you have anything to add on this issue of, you know, this being an economic opportunity zone.
Sure. So this is something that's very new to us. It's very new to every community. It just came out recently, and we were lucky enough to have a lot of community support for our two census tracts that were nominated by our local representatives and also by Governor Walker, and then were certified by the federal government. So the IRS is still working out some of the details on what it takes to be a designated opportunity fund and therefore be able to invest in some of these developments. But we do see a lot of partnerships with some of the other tax credit programs that are out there and some of the other incentives. That it will provide a lot of tools in our toolboxes, Jason, as we often use that term, but that will really be a catalyst for development in this community.
Looking, you know, long term, I mean, what does this space, you know, mean for the future of the city, you know, financially, but also kind of socially, looking at those social benefits we've been talking about.
We really want this to be an area where there's a lot of inclusivity here. So there's going to be, we anticipate that there will be a different range of affordability for homes. So I think that will be a really good model for us. And then also socially, you know, we'll look at the social integration due to the affordability of income of homes. And then also just a place for our entire community. So we anticipate there will be civic buildings where, you know, even if you're living on the north side of town, there's going to be a reason for you to come here. We want this to be also a part of you know, in your own neighborhood.
We've been talking with Andrea Schnick, La Crosse's Economic Development Planner, Jason Gilman, Director of Planning and Development for the City of La Crosse, and Blair Williams, President of Wired Properties in Milwaukee, the new master developer for the Riverside North Project, about the past and the future of the Riverside North Project and what are the next steps for this area. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives for their past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.